Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marchetti, and tonight I am joined by Cody Ajayda and Jack Toohill, both from the lovely state of New South Wales, joining me on a Sunday night to review the latest round of A-League's action. But we're not going to review game by game, as we have been doing in recent pods. We're going to talk about one game in particular, because we have to, the Sydney Derby from last night. And then we're going to talk about a couple of teams. I've got the Jets on here, big win for them against Victory. Melbourne City on here, who have now lost three on the bounce. Interesting to see them kind of falling away after a very promising start to the season. And we'll mention some other stuff from the round as well. But before we get started, Jack, let's start with you. How are things in the world of Jack Toohill? What's been happening?
I'm good. I'm doing fine. Just down here in up here in Newcastle, considering I live in Sydney, because it's my father's birthday today. So shout out to Johnny Toohill. 55 today. Doesn't look a day over 43. So he's doing all right.
Shout out Johnny Toohill. Massive, massive supporter of FPF TV. Big Johnny. Shout out. All right. And I don't know why I said that. And Cody Ajayda, how are you on this Sunday evening?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I appreciate the enthusiasm that you announced my name when you were introducing your podcast. So thank you for that. But no, I'm doing good. Had a quiet day today, at least. Yesterday was a bit more chaotic, but keen to get into some football. Christian?
All right. Well, I am too, and let's get into it. So, Sydney Derby. Cody, were you there at the Sydney Derby last night?
I was indeed.
You were indeed there.
Very last minute, actually. I wasn't intending on going. I was intending on spending a day with family, and a few other family members say they were going too. So I figured, you know what, why not enjoy it? And I'm glad I made the decision to go, because it proved to be quite a game. It was fantastic.
So that was the game of the season. We've had quite a few contenders, like the original rivalry here in Adelaide, I thought, was one. We had Victory Western United, for example, and Western United won 4-3. That was a game being jacked on FPF TV as well. There's been some candidates, but, I mean, occasion, there was a comeback, the atmosphere, the quality of the goals, the shithousery. I mean, a young player in Zach Sapsford having his best game of his career, probably. There was a lot of different items that game ticked off that made it, for me, the game of the season. Jack, how did you see it?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't get to make the trip in person as the previous... as I did go to the Newcastle Jets game earlier that afternoon. However, what a treat to come back to after, you know, going to McDonald Jones Stadium and, you know, taking in that match. Just quickly, I know we'll get to it, but, you know, speedy recovery to the fan that did collapse during the match and had to be taken away to a hospital. So speedy recovery and all the best to that family. But to come home and be treated with that sort of match in the Sydney Derby was, you know, sort of made the day a bit better after, you know, a little bit morbid in that situation. So, yeah, 3-3. Very exciting. I mean, Anthony Caceres is just having an absolute, like, tear of a season. Like, I haven't seen him have a bad game this year. So I'm sure we'll get into that. But yeah, that's how I saw it.
Well, yeah, let's start with Caceres, because he supplies the first goal with an incredible pass to set up Patrick Klamala. I actually think what's kind of gone underrated with this goal, though, is Patrick Klamala's movement to actually lose Anthony Pantazopoulos, get off his shoulder, run into the space, but then obviously Caceres has got to actually see his run and reward it. So from both players was excellent. Superb finish. Then we see Patrick Klamala with his European experience and probably his experience playing in, I believe he's played in the Old Firm derby, Celtic and Rangers. Now, I'm not too sure if when he was a Celtic player, he would have jumped over the fence in front of Rangers fans if he had scored, let's say, at the Ibrox, like he did here, jumping in front of Wanderers fans. That was certainly a brave decision. But
He's played in Poland, and he's probably experienced some derbies there. So I don't think he's very scared of that sort of occasion. He seems to love it.
No, and it did not seem like he was scared at all. Even though he had to be very, very quickly escorted back over the fence by the Wanderers security guard that was down that end. But 1-0, then literally a minute later, Wanderers come down. Clisby puts a good ball in. Harrison Devenish mirrors. I think Cody probably wants to discuss his lack of ability in the Sydney FC goal. There were some aggressive text messages coming in on the group chat yesterday. But parries it straight to Sassford 1-1. Then the Wanderers produce, like, honestly, one of the best counterattacks I've seen all season between Milanovic and Sapsford. About four passes between them over like 60 metres. Sapsford with a perfect low cross, Milanovic coming in for 2-1. And what really annoyed me about that goal and the third goal, which was Borrello with a nice run setting up Sapsford, they both had to be checked for offside when they were both on, and it kind of ruined the atmosphere, the kind of crowd reaction to the goals. But the Wanderers are 3-1 up. They're looking good. Sydney, obviously, from like Douglas Costa comes on, Sydney start to exert some influence. Adrian Segacic then helps a bit more too. And I thought, like, it was only natural that the Wanderers were going to drop a little bit deeper. I mean, you're in a away derby, you're 3-1 up. It is difficult to just kind of keep playing against, you know, a Sydney team with that quality and not allow them, you know, at least a 10-minute period. And really, they did a great job for 87 minutes between particularly Pantazopoulos and Bonatig of clearing crosses, last-ditch defending. And then as soon as Segacic scored, like, it just all went out the window. And, I mean, Sydney, in the end, they get the Segacic goal. Then Lawrence Thomas actually produces an unbelievable save on the corner. But Anthony Caceres is just quickest to react. And we've got, you know, Sydney FC. That's like the second moment that they've had at home in a derby of late. We remember the Kaczarski winner last year, then the Caceres equaliser this time around. Like, they just had these big moments in front of the Cove, which is pretty cool for them. But the Wanderers, like, you know, I know it's easy in this situation to just point to Alan Stajic and be like, oh, and he made these changes, and oh, he didn't do this. But, like, you know, all the subs he made were like-for-like changes. He said afterwards, particularly with Borrello and Gabriel Clerc, they were coming back from injury, and they were very much, you know, subs made to manage those guys in their minutes. Yet, you know, there's all this reaction afterwards, as expected, that, you know, Stajic this, Stajic that. There's just this thing in the A-League at the moment where, like, whenever a team gives up a lead, like, it has to be the coach and the coach's subs. But, you know, if the Wanderers held on 1-3-2, you wouldn't have heard boo about that. So I thought that was a little bit strange. I just thought the Wanderers had to be more resilient there. I mean, you're 3-1 up in the 87th minute. Like, coaching or not, like, you've got to be able to see out the game. Am I crazy with that? Am I not? Maybe Alan Stajic should take more ownership there.
Maybe there's an angle you can look at it where it's like, okay, maybe Stajic could have done this, could have done that. I don't know what people are saying he should have done instead, and I'd like to hear the argument to what he could have done instead. And based on your reaction, I don't think there really has been an argument to...
Well, if I just, before I let you go, Cody, is, like, what if Stajic brought on another centre-back, or brought on... Like, let's say he brought on Mo Alte for Borrello, so it was like a defensive midfielder for a striker, and then the Wanderers led to that situation. Well, then, yeah, okay, you can say he set the team up in a way to defend. That's going to happen. But he didn't do that. And that's kind of where I'm a little bit stumped by that. But as you were saying.
But the reality is, if that Wanderers say that match out and Stajic does set his team up defensively, then people are praising him for game management. It's you got to pick your poison at the end of the day. It's a tough one. It's not a position that I'd envy, of course. But I look at his bench, I don't think there's much different that he could have done. He had Alex Kurz back on the bench, but he said, I don't know if it was him or Noel Arate said it, but Kurz back still underdone, hasn't played a lot of football in a while, I think was in his off-season, so he's still working his fitness up. Imagine if people had a scene, Kurz back come on, it's like, oh yeah, he's done really, really well, he's put on defender, and then Kurz back, you know, maybe, I won't say he makes a calamitous error because he's a good footballer still, but let's just say he doesn't track a run properly because he's not match fit or match aware. The match sharpness isn't there. I'm going in football manager terminology now. I do apologise. But imagine that happens. Then people go, oh, see, Alex, why do you bring on Alex Kurzbach? He's clearly not ready. I think it came out in the Suited and Booted pod. I remember them mentioning Alois. He actually spoke about, like, you know, you see these players that day in, day out. You know everything about them and their fitness levels and what they can and can't do. There's clearly a method to why Stajic made the choices that he did. I'm not even going to say the onus is on the players for, you know, maybe they should have been a bit more resilient. I think the credit needs to go to Sydney FC purely the way that they were able to flip the script on his head, the fight they showed to actually get themselves back into that match. I think it's more Sydney FC just doing really, really well in those moments than Wanderers doing anything out of the ordinary or disastrous. Could they have been better? Sure, but I think how well Sydney did probably overarches how poor Wanderers were, because I don't think Wanderers were that poor, but Sydney were that good, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, look, I want to disagree with the Wanderers being resilient point, just for the sheer fact that it's not just sort of a blemish on their record. Like, they've lost the last two Sydney derbies. They've drawn when they ought to won. And there's also been occasions where the Wanderers could really get a sort of foothold in the top six, and they just haven't taken their opportunity on the day, and they've fallen short, and they find themselves in eighth when, if my maths is correct, they would have been as high as fifth come the end of this round if they had carried on and won that game. So, look, I don't want to come down too hard on them, because I think that whilst the Sydney Derby is still the biggest spectacle in, you know, Australian football, and also there are stars on both sides, I think that both squads don't have a lot of depth in defence. That was definitely on show last night. I think during the game, a few weeks ago, we mentioned about Sydney FC, you know, being very, very light in defence with the centre-backs they were losing when we're looking at sort of some transfers in the previous pod that I was on, and West Sydney Wanderers sort of ditto. But, yeah, I think that the Western Sydney Wanderers, I don't think it's a Stajic thing. I just sort of think that they don't have a lot of cattle, but it's also a mental thing for them, because it's not the first time this season that they've had an opportunity to get, you know, even as high as a top four spot in the A-League. And on the day, they just haven't shown up. I mean, they showed up for about 60 minutes, and then for the last half an hour, Sydney FC were putting the sword to them. And, you know, I was just watching it at home, and I was watching it with family, and we just said, Sydney FC will get a result out of this. Like, as soon as they hit the 65th minute, like, you could just tell, like, the Wanderers weren't there and they weren't going to win.
It's funny you mentioned the lack of depth in defence. I think you see probably the best and worst of having a bit youngish squads as well. There's players that are coming on. You've got some young heads coming in. For Sydney FC, they're in a position where, okay, we've got nothing to lose. Let's just show a bit of fight and see what we can do. Players like Kucharski, Sekicic coming on, clearly flipped the game on his head, even Douglas Costa, but that's, I'm sure we'll talk about him individually in a minute. But one thing that I probably want to point out as well, and I'm sure it's something you've got on your list, Christian, the atmosphere that Sydney FC created that day as well. To be a young team in that, is like, when it's for you, that would have kicked him into another gear, even not just the young players, that whole squad. I'm telling you, I was there, I was closer to where the Sydney FC side was. The noise is deafening. That's something, and we can talk about it. Oh, it's great for the league, it's great for this, great for that. It's also just good to get your team back into a match as well. It's great, great stuff, and I think that probably plays an element into it as well. But on the flip side, Wanderers, they've got a youngish team as well. There's a few young kids coming into the match as well later on. That's a tough environment to play in. So, you know me, Christian, I'm very happy to criticize a side if they've done something stupid, if they've done something wrong. But I don't think this is something that I'm going to look at and put a lot of pressure on Wanderers for, like, oh, how dare you not hold a 3-1 lead? Yeah, there's things they can do better. But I think there's a lot that went Sydney FC's way in that game. And I'm not talking about the fact that they had 8 minutes of injury time. I think to an extent that was actually justified. But there was a lot that Sydney FC did right, and I think that's probably where a lot of the conversation needs to go to.
Yeah, and I mean, so I think for both of these teams, for the Wanderers, it's been an issue all season where they just have these periods in games for 20 or 30 minutes where they drop deep, they stop playing the way they should be playing, and particularly defensively, they just leave gaps, and then they've had these games, like I can remember one, for example, when they played Adelaide United at home really early on the season, where they basically were so poor in the first half, and particularly the first half an hour, that it pretty much lost them the game. So this is not, so to Jack's point, Jack's right, this actually isn't an isolated incident from that point of view, but I do have to agree with Cody and say that it's also not isolated for Sydney FC to come back in this situation like this. They did it very similarly here in Adelaide to draw the game 3-3. They did it in Newcastle recently. I'm trying to just quickly go through their results and remember. They did it in Brisbane early on the season. I remember that game from 2-1 down. So they've had plenty of games now where they've come back. And also, I'll mention this too, because there's been at various points this season from the Sydney FC fan base, you know, Talay out, Talay's been underwhelming, you know, the results aren't there, defensively we're terrible, and looks particularly defensively, yeah, like there's still some serious issues there. What I would say though is for them to dig in like that in a derby at home and play like that, and yeah, Douglas Costa obviously helps, but I do think those players are very much like seeing things. They're on Ufuk Talay's side. They want to play for him, and they're doing their best in every single one of these games. I don't think it's an effort thing with Sydney. I think Sydney, I think tactically they've got some issues, and defensively, I mean, they're running really thin at the moment. I mean, young Carl Shaw, who probably he was very good against Adelaide, but probably then second up last night, I think he kind of got a bit more of a reality check going up against someone like Brandon Brello, for example. He struggled a bit. And Ryan Grant had some decent moments, but I mean, Ryan Grant is not a centre back. He's a fullback, right? And I think in a game like that, he kind of got exposed a little bit too. So I think both these teams, I think Stajic even said it afterwards. He was kind of like, look, if you look at the story for both teams, like they're very good going forward, but defensively, you know, they've just been too porous. And yeah, it's kind of been the story for Sydney FC, not defending well, giving away leads, giving other teams a head start in games, and then having to actually pull off miraculous sort of fight backs. And then the wonder is it's actually either starting a game poorly and similarly, you know, losing the game from there, or starting a game really well and then falling asleep for a 20-minute period in the second half and then letting a team back into it. So, I mean, the frustrating thing for the Wanderers is, and particularly more for Alan Stajic, is like this could have been a massive statement win, right? Because you could say, yeah, they lost the other two derbies, but I felt, by the way, like we've had all three derbies like in the first sort of, what, 60% of the season halfway, which has kind of felt a little bit weird. I would have thought like they would have put one kind of closer towards the end, but anyway. This just felt like he needed a big result, because there's definitely a few Wanderers fans still out there that definitely aren't kind of big fans yet of Alan Stajic. And I just thought for him, that was kind of a bit demoralizing. And for Talay, I mean, you know, Sydney FC, it's kind of one step forward and like a step back again, because they had a great result against Adelaide. They were superb. And then they come out in this game and they score first. And then suddenly at halftime, they're going in 2-1 down, 1 minute into the second half, they're 3-1 down. Like a team of this experience in particular and this much quality, I feel shouldn't be in this position this often, Jack.
Yeah, well, I think that you've sort of highlighted the two converging storylines. You know, Sydney FC have gotten themselves into predicaments and had to work hard to get them out of holes that they've realistically dug themselves, whilst Western Sydney Wanderers have had some pretty positive leads and positive periods, and they've just sort of let the game go and get away from them in periods. But I just wanted to be a little bit more positive. I mean, Segecic and Kaczarski off the bench were great, you know, two young Australian players. I mean, Segecic in particular, since he's come back from the second division in Holland from his loan spell, I think's been tremendous, and what a weapon to have. And like Kaczarski and Segecic, I mean, I have to say, like, you could even look at the bottom six teams in the A-League, and they'd be week in, week out starters playing 90 minutes a match if they could. And also, obviously, Sapsford, like, derby specialist. But it's not just the derby, I think, Sapsford's rose to the occasion. I think he's that sort of occasion player. And that's something that the Western Sydney Wanderers are going to have to value in some sort of contract, because that's going to be extremely valuable in a transfer perspective if they do, like, in terms of extending him beyond. I know they've probably already put an extension in. I think they did at some point this year, but I can't quite remember. But he's got a bit of Didier Drogba about him. Like, you know, he's not like I was gonna
whoa,
say
whoa,
like
well this is a comparison. Keep
hold
going.
On, hold on. So like he's not the most prolific goal scorer. And that's not to say that he can't be the most prolific goal scorer in a league, but when it comes to the big matches where someone's got to step up and perform, it's not just in Sydney derbies, it's been in several other games this season as well. He's really led from the front, and it's just really, really impressive from a young player to be able to do that. So I genuinely think Sachid is a player that, you know, could be there when Western Sydney Wanderers, if they ever get to the promised land of an A-League championship one day. I think that if you build the team around him, you know, he's going to show up on those big occasions. So they really need to make sure they can lock him down for as long as possible, because, you know, there's going to be some people with some pretty fat checkbooks coming and looking at him soon.
Well, I'm having a look here and just going off Transfer Market, which says that Sapsford's contract expires in June. And then I've also, you know, I'm going back here to June of 2022 is when he signed a 3-year deal with the Wanderers. So, yeah, I think his contract might be up at the end of the season. And
well, the fucking board better get on that one quick.
Well, right. Like,
don't be riots because, in Parramatta.
Like, yeah, I don't know what's going on there, because like they could very easily lose him for free in the offseason. And like the way he's going, they probably will. That was, like I mentioned before, that was his best game I've seen of his career. And you're right, Jack. I think to just label Zach Sapsford as like a derby specialist or just a big game play is pretty disrespectful to actually how well he's played this season. I mean, the movement that he offers, he's actually like this Wanderers attack. This one thing I think Alan Stadish has got very much right since he's taken over. The attacking sort of structure of the Wanderers is very dangerous. And with Milanovic and Borello and Sapsford and Kryev, like you've got four guys that can interchange positions, that can offer a vertical threat in behind. And Sapsford, now he's actually adding the finishing element to it too. The only thing is, he could have had a hat trick. There was like, he had a couple chances at 3-1 to just actually bury the game. And I mean, you look at it now and think, wow, like if he took one of those, you know, we're looking at a pretty comfortable Wanderers victory probably. Cody, any word actually on on Sapsford? But also, we haven't actually given Douglas Costa some flowers here, because I really did think, I know Segicic and Kucharski you mentioned, but you need to have that experienced guy to almost lead the way for those guys to then come on and actually have their imprint too. And I thought Douglas Costa, like, he just got himself involved straight away. He got in good areas. He used that brilliant left foot of his to actually whip some dangerous crosses into the box as well. And, you know, he hasn't had the goals and assists on the board to really justify it. And also, he's obviously just come back from a 6-week layoff. But he's been like pretty good. I've been pretty impressed whenever he's actually played this season.
I'll start with Sapsford quickly. I think if you're looking at his season overall, 6 goals and an assist in 15 games, and he's not playing 90 minutes week in, week out. You're talking pretty much goal involvement every 2 matches. That's a pretty good record. I think that's something that should be highlighted. And it's funny because I remember during his kind of youth days, he was probably more of a creator per se rather than an out-and-out goal scorer. So it's interesting to see how he's kind of developed into what he can be for the Wanderers. It's interesting. I do hope Wanderers do keep him on, or at the very least give him another season contract and try and sell him off, because he's someone that could get in a decent fee as well. If clubs overseas see someone that can step up in a big game as well, and more often than not have their better performances in a side's biggest games of the season, that's what you want. That's what you want. That shows a mentality that may actually last overseas too. He's 22 now. He'd probably be going over at a good age. If he can get into a club overseas somewhere where he can be a starting player for him, I reckon he'd actually do quite a decent job. If he went to a low Scottish Premier League club or maybe a League One club, that might be his level overseas. But if he can go somewhere where he's going to get minutes, that's a move that I'd probably take if I can get that at the moment. Douglas Costa. Funnily enough, watching him last night, there was moments where I was getting really, really frustrated because, and I don't know if it's something that's been coached into him a little bit, where maybe he's not.
You didn't get your Brazilians mixed up, and it wasn't actually Leo Senna that you were getting frustrated with, because
oh no, he frustrated me a lot as well. Great technical player, but for a derby player, someone filling a role that Bratton used to have, the guy has no upper body strength or no bone of aggression in his body whatsoever.
Oh, I'd actually disagree. I think he has a lot of upper body strength because he wins a lot of fouls. He's actually the most fouled player in the league, but he
yeah, but that
gives
could
up,
also be
he gives
he
up when
down
he feels
to the touch of a
like. Yeah, he gives up when he feels one touch. Welasol does this as well for Newcastle when he plays. Jack would have seen it earlier on the season, where it's just like, no. But like, it's a perfect comparison because, I'm sorry, like these Brazilian guys who come in and they're just like, oh shit, this league's physical. Wait, what? And then they just stop playing as soon as they like feel a tug of the shirt.
Adverse reaction is to get someone like Marcelo who brings that aggression.
Well,
maybe a bit.
Well,
maybe
yeah,
too far.
I did think one point, Cody, before I let you go on a bit more about Douglas Costa, was the third goal they checked for offside against Sapsford, but they actually showed on the TV earlier on, Brillante actually looked to have a bit of center shirt leading up to it, and it did feel a little bit, you know. That's probably given if the referee kind of sees that in real time. So that
yeah,
was
but it's probably a bit of the boy who cried wolf as well. The amount of time center went down for no reason and was
winning
fouls.
But this is the problem, right? If you keep crying wolf like that, the referee's going to be like, well, get fucked, man. Like,
that's my point.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, the thing with Douglas Costa, you know, you see the highlights of him when he's playing at Juventus and all that. And then like the guy does things with the ball that's almost unimaginable. He's an absolutely fantastic player. And take players on, he'll be behind you before you can even blink and say boot. But I feel like since he's come to Sydney FC and probably even coming out of his injury may be a thing as well, they're just trying to manage him and get into play a style that doesn't see him like break a knee or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, every time he's got the ball, he'll almost slow down with it and stand his defender up and he's forced into a position where he's got to play a pass rather than being able to take someone on quickly like that. And that's when he first came on, that was frustrated the hell out of me, because there was many times where he's got a defender one-on-one and he slows down, stops himself and goes, oh, now I've got to find a pass. And mind you, the guy can pass the ball as well. It wasn't exactly to Sydney's detriment, but it's just a weird feeling when you know a player can take that extra gear. And I think as Sydney were getting further into that match and they were getting a little bit more desperate, then his mentality started going, okay, yeah, now I've really got to click into gear and create something and maybe do something that surprises Wanderers defense a little bit and try and create a bit more space for myself. Obviously, the goal that came from Sekicic was from a Douglas Costa pass too, but I don't know if that's something that's being coached into him, and if it's an Australian thing where, you know, we don't necessarily like players that try to be flashy and try to be fancy. I know there's been, you look at how your Arzani's and Tilios go and people put them down very, very quickly for doing that sort of stuff. And we're looking at it going, okay, we want to overcoach our players to a certain point of view, to a certain point. But you have someone like Douglas Costa, if you let him off the leash a little bit and go out there, do whatever the fuck you want, just try and win us this game, Sydney FC probably could have gotten back into that game a little bit earlier. But
I think he does do that. I've watched every Sydney FC game this season, and
it might be a thing of I was looking at it last night because I was looking at it a little bit more closely, yeah. And maybe it's something that they're doing just to manage, or something that he's doing because he's trying to manage the injury. Well,
maybe that's the case
make
last
those high
night.
Speed runs and all that.
Might have been managing.
That could be it. But you can't argue that we do have an issue of overcoaching in certain areas in this country too.
Yeah, but I wouldn't put Ufitale in that mix. I think he does allow CDFs. I mean, look at Joe Lolli this season, for example.
Yeah,
he's playing him in more of a free role too this year, and it's kind of getting
that's
him
fair.
In more.
Maybe if he's just catching strays.
I think he is. I think you got to lay off Wolfie here. No. But Costa last night.
I'll take that. But speaking back to the positive side of things, where Costa was able to come on and make an impact, you have someone that has that higher level of technical ability. You have someone that has that experience. It's like, you know, he's performed at the top level. He's played Serie A, played Bundesliga. He knows his way around football pitch, and he sees the game in a different way to what the other players do. When you have that option on the bench and you've got someone that doesn't just have that ability but has a desire to actually come on and want to put on a show and want to show that he can be the guy, it's, you mentioned before, he probably hasn't had the goals and assists to warrant what he's been able to do this season, and he's been probably the underrated part of Sydney's attack this season. Joe Lolli and Patrick Lamala, they're the ones that have gotten the goals and assists, and they're the ones doing the numbers, and they're the ones that are able to get in front of Sydney fans to celebrate. But Douglas Costa does a lot of work behind the scenes to allow them to flourish as well, which is brilliant as well. When you're paying, look, he's on good money too. You want someone that's going to have that impact. But I think it's also funny the fact that Sydney's probably poor patch of form this season came when Douglas Costa was injured as well. So for someone that's not pulling as much numbers as what some other players in the front three do, you see the impact that he can have when he's not on the pitch. And it was chalk and cheese between when he was off the field and when he was on the field last night.
Yeah, 33 minutes last night, 53 touches. He had 80% pass accuracy, not bad. Obviously got the assist for Segicic, 4 key passes, created just on one that, big chance.
53 touches for a winger coming on
in 33 minutes, like match. It's pretty.
That's nuts.
That's what
and
I mean.
That shows how much Sydney value him to get him on the ball and actually.
Right, and he also had 12 crosses attempted in just 33 minutes. Only 3 of them were actually successful, to be fair. But 2 out of 4 dribbles completed. He lost possession 19 times in 33 minutes, but he also, like we mentioned, had 53 touches, so it's kind of going to happen. But yeah, like, I just felt he tried to make things happen. All right, we need to conclude the derby chat because that's almost been half an hour on one game. Okay, so let's talk about the Newcastle Jets. That's why Jack's here. He wants to talk about the Jets because, okay, here's my question. Jack, here's my question for the Jets. This is actually funny because Cody's here and I remember Cody having some very strong comments about this at the time. Was Rob Stanton right? Did his press conference work? Here's the Jets' form. Here's game by game from the Jets since the infamous My Hands Built Australia get the boxing gloves out press conference from Rob Stanton. Let's go through it. 4-0 win against Perth in Perth. Lost 2-1 against Wellington, but were extremely unlucky in that game and definitely should have come away with something. Drew 2-2 at home to Sydney, 2-0 up. Beat the Roar away, 1-0. Lost to MacArthur 3-1 at home, deserved loss. Lost 3-1 at Western, deserved loss. But then since those two losses, 2-2 draw against Perth, should have won at home. 2-2 draw in the F3 derby, came back from 2-0 down, but I think definitely on the balance of chances, like they were probably the better team over the 90 minutes. And then yesterday, the big marquee result, getting a 3-0 win over the Melbourne Victory. Now, before we talk about the game, I want to echo Jack's words, and our thoughts are very much with the fan that needed to receive medical attention in the crowd yesterday. And we hope all is well, and our thoughts are very much with them. But there was the break, there was a delay in the game. Costa Grozos had to wait like 20 minutes between a penalty being awarded and having to take it, stepped up, finished it, and then the Jets finished really strong. And the subs, Cotter, Charles Momba, made a difference, made an impact. Lockie Rose as well, who's been actually really good off the bench of late for Newcastle. And Jack, I think, listen, they are still 10 points off the top six right now. I still think that would be a bridge too far for them to be a finals team this year. But like, we're a season and a half into the Rob Stanton era now. They've gotten a bit of experience in with Cotter. Some of these young guys are taking some steps forward. Like, are we starting to see something that's a bit more substantial long term for Newcastle?
Well, it looks like they've certainly turned some sort of corner. I would have to caveat that the way in which they drew against Perth Glory and the Central Coast was a little bit demoralizing considering how good they were going forward. I mean, those goals they conceded against Perth, absolutely atrocious. I mean, can't do much about the freaking handball, but the second goal, absolutely atrocious defending. And that first goal from the Central Coast was walked in way too easy. And unfortunately, Ryan Scott drops the ball. But this week, you know, it led to Noah James making his first appearance in almost 5 years for the Newcastle Jets. And, you know, apart from someone else who I'll mention, was definitely the man of the match. So kudos to him to staying persistent and resilient. He's had a few spells in the NPL Victoria, the NPL New South Wales. But yeah, again, just to echo your words, the definite man or woman of the match is Dr. Claudia Lawson. The Newcastle Jets are on-field doc for the game. It was posted via Facebook by the strength and conditioning coach of the Jets. And, you know, I was sort of in the part of the stadium where I sort of saw everything unfold, and her, bravery and just the quickness that she acted when she saw the fan go down in distress is really commendable. And, you know, irregardless, like, she's an absolute hero and a legend for what she did. And just also the fans that were around in that section of the pitch, just the way they behaved and acted quickly to try to get someone in there to help the distressed fans, you know, full credit to them, and also the McDonald Jones venue staff. Also have to say that, you know, just near there, saw Maurice Brissetto, saw Jason Hoffman, and I can't remember his name, he's another board member, it'll come to me, but they were all down there watching it unfold and making sure that the fan was being correctly attended to and they were getting the correct attention. So in that moment of distress, everyone in the stadium who were all concerned about it, everyone behaved really, really well during that time, and allowed for the unfortunate patient to get the care they needed. And I don't want to comment too much on their condition. There's no details being released yet, but just some reports that they were able to be transported to hospital, and we haven't heard any bad news of it yet, which is a positive sign, to say the least. Talk about the game. You know, just the coolness of Costa Grozos in that sort of moment, as you know, you have to take the human part of it as well. You know, a fan's gone down in distress, you know, all the players watched it unfold, and it would have been, you know, quite worrisome for every player on that pitch, you know, both Melbourne Victory and Newcastle Jets, you know, equally, and to stand there and then also have the coldness just to slot that penalty away. You know, kudos to him. Yeah, like you said, the subs that were injected in the second half were absolutely amazing. And I want to say, Charles Mbonwa, that was a fantastic performance. And I've already mentioned another Chelsea legend. I'm going to make another one here. It was like N'Golo Kante out there. Like, his way that he fought back the ball.
This is absurd. What are you doing? I'm a Chelsea fan. I have to step in here. This is... Come on,
I know.
Saxo, Drogba, Mbonwa, Kante. Like, what's going on, man?
I'm a Liverpool fan. I hate it just as much as you. So, like, you know, but I have to make the comparisons when they come up. And again, I think the Jets in the first half really wasted a few opportunities. They had the wind behind them, which was quite a fierce wind, and I don't think they used it to their advantage. They do have quite a bit of pace in the wings. So it was a bit disappointing that they went into halftime without getting some sort of goal. And also sort of the defensive frailty that they showed in the first half, you know, led to Noah James just like making some of the best saves like I've seen a goalkeeper make. I mean, Ryan Scott, I love you to bits and you're a good goalkeeper, but man, you might have to learn what the bench feels like for the next couple of weeks, because if Noah James gets dropped the very next match after a performance like that, you know, that would, I think, be wildly offensive. And, you know, he's coming into his own. He's 23 now and he needs to get some minutes on his belt. So, you know, kudos to him. And then also just the counter-attacking thereafter, after the stoppage, after the penalty was secured, and the Jets not trying to just manage the game and get through another 10 minutes, actually trying to make sure of it, was a big switch to how they've been playing the last 4 weeks. Like, you know, the two draws that was in the last 2 weeks was the Jets having good patches. I mean, of course, the Central Coast got out in front and they had to dig that one out, but especially the Perth Glory result, they could have been up 6 or 7 nil by that first 35 minutes and they didn't take their chances, and there was a few chances in there in the first half that the Newcastle Jets really should have put away. But just the attitude to go, I was like, look, you know, we've got the penalty, you beauty, but we need to go and win this game because we haven't won at home for 9 months. And you saw that in the attitude, and I don't know if it was a Rob Stanton thing, but look, there's still a chance. I think it's a very low chance, but if the Jets play like that, they will pick up a few more points this season and maybe put a little bit of pressure on. I'm not going to say they're part of the pack. In fact, I put them wooden spooners as my preseason prediction. So, you know, the better they go, the more...
They're not going to finish bottom. They're nine points clear of Brisbane right now, too. They're not.
But, you know, it'd be interesting to see how they perform this week against Adelaide United. I feel like that counter-attacking style is really going to suit that occasion. Whether they can... you know, allow Adelaide that much of the ball and be able to contain them is going to be a different thing entirely. In terms of the lineup, like, I think you have to start Charles Mbonwa. I thought he was incredible coming off the bench, and I think he deserves a start. I know that he's only just joined the club in recent weeks, but I really like what he added. I think Lachie Rose and Coda should still be on the bench, mainly because Lachie Rose is coming back from a soft tissue injury. You know how worrisome they can be. And, you know, I actually like Coda off the bench. I thought he was brilliant when he came on the last couple of weeks. And I think that even though he's an international and people want to see him start, I generally think Taylor and Eli Adams being on those wings is better suited for the first periods of the game. And then having Kota coming up against a tight defense where he can turn and he can put balls in behind to someone like Clayton Taylor, someone like Lockie Rose, who do know how to dribble the ball at their feet, can hold up the play and also give chances. I think that's a really shrewd tactical thing that Rob Stanton's done, because he would have been tempted from his very first appearance to start him, and he hasn't. And I think you should resist that temptation, because I think coming off the bench, he's just going to be an absolute weapon.
Well, yeah, boxing glove jokes aside, like Stanton, he actually did change the system about probably 6 or 7 games ago, and Newcastle are now playing in a 3-4-3 in possession. They got Cotter, he's actually coming on, but he's playing as a wingback.
Yeah.
And you've got... I love the front three that got going with Gibson, Adams, and Taylor. I actually think those guys really work well together. The chemistry is good. And I think you're right about Lockie Rose as kind of a super sub. But who knows? I think he likes Gibson from the start and then giving him basically 60 and then Lockie Rose the last 30. I think that's how he's going to kind of do it. It's kind of similar to kind of how Adelaide managed like Archie Goodwin and Luki Ivanovic, for example. But... Cotter might have to start next week because Philip Chanchar obviously came off yesterday, and they might need to shuffle Thomas Aquilina in as a right centre back. We'll see.
I will highlight, sorry to interrupt, but they actually sort of changed the formation. So they were playing a three at the back, but as it was seen from the stands, as I was viewing it, when Chanchar came off with that unfortunate injury, they actually reverted back to that 4-2-3-1 that they were sort of playing early in the season. And I actually quite like that just with Timmins and Mbomwa in that defensive midfield.
Timmins was the best player on the pitch yesterday. He was unbelievable.
I disagree.
I think he was fantastic.
I think he played awesome after the stoppage. I thought... like, he was good defensively, he was good disrupting. I thought that he didn't take as much care with the ball as I would have liked to see in the first periods. But towards the end of the match, he played some really good balls through and got the Jets forward in some crucial periods. But yeah, I would move, actually, instead of playing that three, because I don't have enough centre-backs to play that formation, I would move back to the 4-2-3-1. Because that's how they played the last half an hour. Maybe
you know, they've got two systems now that they could also use too, so they can chop and change kind of during the game. I think Mbomwa starting possibly. I just think if you're going to take out one of Timmins or Bayless, it's got to be Bayless, not Timmins. I think Timmins is playing really well at the moment. Anyway, but Cody, we haven't gone to you yet. What are your overall thoughts on the Newcastle Jets? I know you were very critical at the time when Rob Stanton came out after that Adelaide loss at home and the infamous comments where he said he would get the boxing gloves out at training. But their performances have markedly been better actually since that moment. But I also think it's coincided with like someone like Cotter coming in and this kind of system change that they've been rolling as well.
Look, I think we were conflating my disappointment with those comments with how I actually view Robbie Stanton. I actually really like him as a coach. I do think he's... I like the style of play. I like the way he thinks. I think there's good qualities there. Look, unfortunately, Newcastle, there's not probably that talent in the squad to really go and take him a step level to be, you know, finals contenders or anything like that. But for what he's got, he's not doing a bad job. I'll be honest with you, though. Like, even since those comments, I can't... maybe the performance has improved, but I can't say I'm impressed with the results. Like, you've won, one game in that period just on the weekend. I know there was a Perth and Brisbane results, but let's be real, everyone's beating them at the moment, so I don't know how much you can look into that.
No, but their performances have been much, much better from their opening, five games.
I don't know. I'm not reading into this too much. They're still, if you look at the top 11 teams, because let's be real, like I said, Perth and Brisbane, not exactly doing much this year. They're still coming last out of everyone else, and they're still a little bit away from actually.
But I'm not looking at it
from a results point of view. Right? Yeah. So that's probably where the difference is coming in. You're looking at the performances. You're thinking they're doing all right. I never had an issue with, I guess, what they were trying to do. So the only improvement that I can see is them actually getting results on the ball. This is a good step towards maybe that area improving. But I think until I see that, I'm not going to sit there and go, oh, yeah, I'm on the bandwagon as well. I have no issue with Stan, I'll profess that. I thought the comments were a little bit, you know, outdated and of a mind of someone that, you know, is still stuck in an age that society is fortunately moved on from. But in terms of Stan as a coach, he's a great coach. I that's something I'm happy to stand on. I just think that there's still areas that, in terms of actually getting results, I still think there's a lot of improvement to come from Newcastle. I think there's still an area there that they can actually go and take another step in. They play, who's their next game? Adelaide United. That's okay. Yeah, look, that's probably a big ask, but their next few games are actually really, really tough. So it's hard to say you actually want them to take a step forward. But let's just say that they go between Adelaide.
Oh, they got Brisbane at home after that. Very winnable.
That's yeah, it is very winnable. You'd want to hope they can. If they lose that game, then I'd be asking a lot of questions.
Yeah, but hang on a minute. So my point with this is, like, Newcastle are closer. I actually think right now they are closer to being like a sneaky finals team in terms of like 7th, 8th than being absolute dross like Perth and Brisbane. That's my point. I'm not saying that they're going to make the finals. No way.
I'm saying that.
Yeah.
My point of view is you're comparing the dross in the league this season to the fact that this is the worst dross that I've seen in the A-League in some time. You can't compare in the bottom two because the bottom two are barely A-League level sides at the moment.
Yeah, I want to echo that.
Perth have also actually had better performances in the past month. But anyway, let's keep going.
In the past month, but they're still pretty bad. And Brisbane, they're another question altogether. Please don't get me started on Brisbane.
Brisbane are horrific. The only reason Brisbane have been competitive recently is because Henry Hoare actually might be a top five player in the league. And he's just come back and made them. But like, I'm actually not joking.
They have Henry Hoare and then they have a low NPL squad around it. That's pretty much.
We've had this conversation. I'm fully in agreement. Yeah.
But I just wanted to say, like, again, like, it's an extremely short sample size. I'm going to somewhat agree to Christian and then also, like, make a huge caveat to your point. If they play like that every single week, that could actually give the teams that they've got, and mind you, they are versing pretty much every team that's above them except for Brisbane for the remainder of the season. So, like, every game's a six-pointer. I mean, if they want to make a challenge, it's probably not going to happen. I think it's very, very unlikely. Mm-hmm. But there's one thing that's been lacking at the Newcastle Jets since about 2018. It's called thing called consistency, right? And their performances have been wildly inconsistent through multiple different coaches. And, look, I humbly believe if they've played like that against every single week, they'd be a top four side because they fucking put the sword to victory in that last half an hour. Like, they put him to bed and, you know, tucked him good night. So, like, if they play like that against Adelaide, their smoke is for a chance. If they play like that against Auckland, their smoke is for a chance for points. But whether it's going to happen or not is a completely different thing.
I don't think it would. All I'm saying is, so, like, last year, Newcastle had pretty much no experience. What, Brandon O'Neill? I'm trying to remember. Jack, you might need to help me out.
They had Brandon O'Neill, Jenkinson. Weir was their second keeper who was...
I mean, Hoffman was still involved, but wasn't playing as much. But, like, even those experienced guys were, like, you know, basically near the end of their careers. I mean, Brandon O'Neill was not being good for Perth Glory this year, for example. But what I'm saying is someone like Cotter, even one player like that can come in as a foreign player, really professional. We've already seen, like, Lockie Rose commenting about him saying, like, yeah, like, the standards this guy sets, the professionalism, it's massive for us. Like, even one player like that for a young team like this that actually has, like, a lot of talent, still has talent. Like, there are good young players in this team, can just actually raise their ceiling a little bit. That's all I'm saying. And what I'm getting at is I don't think Newcastle are going to make the finals. No, of course not. I think they've got way too much of a mountain to climb, and I don't expect them to, you know, go to Adelaide United next week and win. No, that's not all I'm saying. I think the discussion I just wanted to have here was that I think there's actually the building blocks of something that actually could be decent long term, as in, like, could they be a finals team next year? Yeah, maybe. If they keep this up, they could. They could. That's obviously dependent on, you know, what happens in the offseason and what they do. But someone like just getting another experienced guy like Akota, who's actually good, but not like not well a soul, like actually good. So, and that can just help you out a little bit and also help these younger guys and managing games and all this sort of stuff as well. And, you know, like Cody said, like they play the right way. They try and play the right way every single week. And they have moments in games where, you know, they'll be like all over a team for 20 minutes. But, you know, as Jack mentioned as well, like the Perth game, even like the first half against the Mariners in the derby where they need to take their chances. Otherwise, it's going to come back to bite them in the ass. All right, Jack, anything to add on the Jets before we move on?
Can I just add one thing?
Or Cody.
Look, In my opinion, the building blocks have been there for almost the entire time Stanton's been there. They've got the underlying style of play. They know what they want to do when they're on the ball. They probably need two or three more players if they want to be serious about making finals. My point of view from this is, you know, what we've seen from them over the last few weeks is nothing different to what I've seen from them for the last couple of years. They have the result on the weekend. It was a really good result. It's something that they've, in my opinion, they've always been capable of doing on their day. If they can go to the next five games and besides the Brisbane one and then win maybe one or two other ones, then yeah, I'll start looking at it and going, okay, yeah, maybe we're starting to see a turn with the results. I just want to see it happen on a bit more of a consistent basis before I sit there and go, okay, yeah, oh, I'm seeing something here. And I want to see those results come against sides that aren't both Glory or Brisbane Roar either.
Well, they did just beat Melbourne Victory, to be fair. But,
yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, this
yeah,
is
one no, no, I know what you're saying. Like, more results against like, actual
against
final
A-League
contenders.
Sites.
Yeah.
Not just finals contenders. I'd take a win against Wellington.
Perth, come on. Listen, I've said this to a few people this week. Perth are actually, like, better than Brisbane. Like, let's...
Yeah, but to be fair, I think they beat Perth while Perth was still in that weird kind of shit phase.
Yeah, no, they did. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But Perth are out of that phase. Phase. They're a lot better now. They're a lot better. They should have been the Mariners on Friday as well.
Look, that's another conversation in itself, I guess. But look, maybe Perth aren't the team that they were at the start of the season. But that's when Jets played them, so that's all I have to go off.
I just wanted to be clear that Brisbane are in a league of their own. They are rubbish, okay? Like, just.
Do you reckon, when you say league of their own, do you reckon they can be mixed in with the New Zealand Knights side? They've got, like, 8 points in the season or something?
Honestly, they're probably better than the New Zealand Knights because of Henry Hoare. So, yeah.
But I think they're worse. I think they're better atrocious. I mean, the comparison there is like, yeah, Henry Hoare, but also like every team in the A-League these days, I think squad, if you can care pound for pound, were better than those inaugural squads.
I'd rather watch the Mariners Darkies again.
Yeah. That's true. Bring back Muller. I want to see Muller play again.
Bring back Tony Walmsley's Mariners. Good.
Bring him back. Run it back. Usain Bolt trial incoming.
Incoming.
I reckon Usain Bolt is start for this Brisbane Roar side just quietly.
Does Usain Bolt have a better touch than Adam Zamorino? Yes, possibly. Possibly he does. So, yeah, I think there's a conversation to be had there. All right. Anyway. Melbourne City was the final team I want to talk about on the pod today because I was fortunate enough actually to commentate that game, co-commentary on the collective. Cody's done some commentary with them too.
The last game I did with them was Melbourne City against MacArthur.
There you go. And Jack, that was with my boy, our boy, Seb O'Neill, of course, on the lead comms, cooking as he always does. Shout out Seb.
Seb O'Neill TV returning soon.
Seb O'Neill TV returning soon. And like Melbourne City... That was probably the first time I'd actually seen a team this season for half of football actually throw Adelaide off their game and totally suffocate them. But they just couldn't do it for 90 minutes. And, I mean, Yaya Dakuli came off the bench and just seemed to change the game for Adelaide in the second half. The first 10 minutes, Adelaide just got totally on the front foot again and they got the goal through Archie Goodwin. And then after that, Melbourne City... Like, they've obviously got, and the question I wrote down here is kind of if their injuries are starting to catch up with them, because they had that period about a month or so ago where they beat, like, Wellington at home, they beat West United at home, they were picking up a few wins, and everyone was kind of raving about how good of a job Aurelio Vidmar was doing with all these young players amid such a serious injury crisis. And yet, a month later, we're sitting here now looking at three straight losses. They've had, to be fair, three games on the road in a row, losing to Auckland away, which is actually no shame in doing. A lot of teams are struggling there at the moment. They lost to MacArthur away, which is where I first kind of... Nick Cody, you were commentating that game, right? You just mentioned when they lost to MacArthur. Yeah. Now, that game there, particularly in the second half, was really similar to the second half they had on Friday, where they concede a goal, and then just after that, a team just basically sits in a low block. They put numbers behind the ball, and Melbourne City, despite having Marco Tilio and Nathaniel Atkinson, which they brought off the bench on Friday, they just couldn't create anything of substance. I mean, the biggest sort of red flag of like how bad that second half was the Ben Abraham, I think, was the referee. If I'm not, yeah, he was. If I'm not mistaken, and he basically blew the full-time whistle just as Tilio had mishit a pass across the pitch to Ben Mazzeo, and it just kind of summed it up that for the last sort of 20 minutes, I don't think Melbourne City actually got the ball into a dangerous, into a dangerous area or any sort of dangerous cross that threatened an Adelaide United defence that is, you know, still got its issues despite obviously the position that they're in. That was actually a rare clean sheet for Adelaide United, and I mean, credit to them, they did defend pretty well. But I guess Lecky's come back, he got through 65 minutes. Tilio came off the bench, honestly didn't look great, but he's probably just still building his minutes. I think earlier Vidmar said Andreas Kuen is a couple of weeks away, Cohen a little bit longer. Like, I'm just not sure, like, they're spiraling at the moment, and it's not like they're going to get three players back next week. Caputo did come back too, so, and he looked good starting straight back in the team. So they're just going to need to get, like, these guys have got to get up to speed pretty quickly, I feel, with their sharpness, the likes of Lecky and Tilio, because I just think this team now is like, the goals have dried up for someone like Ben Mazzeo. Lawrence Wong was awesome in this game, particularly in the first half, but he's not really a guy that's going to give you a massive goal threat. Same with Harry Politides, not on a regular basis. So they're going to need these guys, like, not just back fit and playing, but actually providing the quality that they're actually on the, you know, the contracts that they're on should be providing. Cody,
it's probably a good time for them to be coming up against the Perth side, actually, because, you know, there's a chance to maybe build up a bit of confidence. I look at those three games, in all honesty, you've got two of those against the top two sides in the league, Auckland, Adelaide, both away from home as well. You're going to struggle to get results out of them. The one I think you're going to point out as well, MacArthur, that's probably the one that you go, okay, yeah, this isn't what you'd expect from Melbourne City. But, and it probably speaks to what you mentioned with the Adelaide game as well, it kind of played out in a similar way. Melbourne City really on the ball in the first half, creating a lot, just unable to find that breakthrough. But then they come out in the second half and the performance actually dips a little bit. That first half against MacArthur, Melbourne City could have been up 2-3-0 almost quite easily. But then they came out in the second half, MacArthur were able to get over the top of them. They didn't look like they were ready almost to restart. And MacArthur had a period of 20 minutes where they actually had the ascendancy, and they were able to take advantage of it. And then, as you said, they sit in that low block, invite a lot of pressure. And Melbourne City, to their credit, were actually able to create a lot in that back end of the second half against MacArthur. They were probably just a bit unfortunate that nothing was able to come to fruition. Whereas I think with Adelaide, it was more a case of once Adelaide scored, Adelaide were, you know, in cruise control for the rest of the match and able to have a semi amount of control over what Melbourne City could or couldn't do. So if I look at that MacArthur game individually, yeah, there's probably an issue there. Three games on the bounce obviously isn't where you want to be. But if you add the context of, as you said at the start, they're three games away from home. And as I said as well, two of those games are against the top two sides in the league. It was always going to be a difficult period for them. And, you know, we can talk about their injuries as well. They are playing with a depleted squad. And considering they're playing with a depleted squad, the performances that they're putting out aren't actually that bad. I think it's just a storm that they've got to weather, really. And they're coming into a period now where you've got a Perth Glory side that, as much as maybe they're getting better, are still very much beatable for Melbourne City, especially at home. And then you've got a Melbourne derby where everything gets thrown out the window, form gets thrown out the window, nothing matters anymore. It's just about how you play in those 90 minutes. So they're probably coming into a period now where they can almost forget about what's happened in the last few weeks and actually create a new run of form for themselves as well.
Yeah, I think that the whole discussion with Melbourne City, I think that's blown, like, a bit out of proportion. They've won the same amount of games as Melbourne Victory, MacArthur, Sydney FC and Western United. Like, they're still a fairly decent winning side. Like, I mean, they've only lost six games and that might seem a lot, but five games and it might seem a lot. And I would say that in previous seasons, there's probably a few games in there where if they didn't have their depleted squad, they would have earned draws out of some of those games and it would have been looked a little bit more fondly upon. But, I mean, they've got still got 11 games to play, whilst MacArthur and Sydney FC have played 17 games and only have 9 games to play. Like, they've got 2 games in hand over a few of these teams. And, like, yeah, I think that, like, this is the period where Melbourne City are going to look really dangerous. Like, I can easily see them. I mean, I know it's extremely condensed between 10th and 3rd. Like, it's extremely big pack, like it always is between those places in the A-League. But, Like, I can easily see them going on a run. I think that this is where their squad, I know they've been playing depleted over the last, like, several months, but they're going to start to get, you know, they got Lecky back and they're going to start to get a little bit more confidence as well with that experience in the squad. And I think they'll be just fine. Like, I'm not worrisome about those losses. In two of those games, both the Adelaide game and also the MacArthur game, I don't think they played that bad.
I disagree with a lot of that. I think because the MacArthur and Adelaide, like, I mean, so Auckland, so they've lost three in a row, but Auckland going back there again, like we said, no shame in losing to Auckland, and it was kind of just a crazy 15 minutes in the end of the first half that lost them the game. But they had 59% of the ball in that game, 0.65 XG created. MacArthur, 64% of the ball, 0.92 XG created across the game. On Friday, 50-50 was the possession because Adelaide obviously a much better team at keeping the ball. But even so, I think if you had a look at the last 20 minutes, City probably had near on 60% of the ball. 0.52 XG created. What I'm saying is there's a trend in these last few games where it just feels like teams are starting to figure out their patterns of play a bit more. Now, the only thing I would say is with someone like Lecky coming back in, Tilio is going to come back in like from the start eventually. Caputo started his first game. So there might be a little bit of a recalibration needed with how they actually play. And maybe they need to kind of readjust with actually those guys coming back in. And maybe that's why they've struggled a little bit to create. But that's kind of what's worrying for me is that they're not creating in these games, these last few games. They're actually not creating. Now, to your point about they're not that bad performances. Well, maybe because defensively they still look pretty solid, and you know, these are tight games. Like, they've only lost 1-0 in the last two games. But I just think Melbourne City, the way they want to play and the way they would judge themselves always on is we're a possession-based side, we're an attacking side, we have to create chances. If we miss, who cares? I mean, Arida Vidmar even set off the game on Friday. Yeah, we were scoring a lot of goals. Then that kind of went away, probably because, like I mentioned, someone like Ben Mazzeo, for example, who was scoring goals, like, he's not going to be able to keep that up throughout a whole season. He's only, 19 still? Might even be 18, Ben Mazzeo. So he's still really a young player, and that's difficult to get that consistency. But for me, is when those guys are coming back from injury, you want to still be a team that's creating and actually getting in good positions. So, look, you guys are right in the sense that this conversation could be mute next week when they, you know, if they thrash Perth 4-0 and create a whole bunch of chances and everything's all good, and particularly with these guys coming back. I just thought basically the conversation is just flagging it because it's just a worrying.
It's worth flagging. Yeah. It's not like Melbourne City, you don't expect them to lose three games in a row. It's not a situation you necessarily want to be in. I look at the MacArthur game, 0.92 XG. I don't think that actually does justice in terms of the amount of pressure they were able to put on MacArthur. Maybe there were issues going into the final third. I understand that, but
yeah, XG doesn't factor in obviously like half chances, to be fair, like dangerous crosses. Yeah.
And XG does need a lot of context around it as well. It's something that can be useful, but it's something that you need to use in context as well. Like there's obviously a myriad of things that you can look at around it as well that can prove another argument. But like I said, Perth coming up next is probably coming at a good time for them. If they can't get a result against Perth, then yeah, I think that's when you start asking questions as well, because one, that's four games in a row you've lost, but now you're playing sides that really should be beatable if you're not winning those games. And what are you winning exactly?
Yeah, and so I was intrigued by Caputo. Yeah, Caputo came straight back in, played up front. He looked great, to be fair, on a first start. But yeah, Lawrence Wong, I mentioned there briefly. I mean, I think actually one thing, because we didn't actually really talk about Melbourne City when they were doing well on the pod, and I think a lot of people were kind of surprised that they were still getting results and doing okay even with all these guys out. But for me, it wasn't as surprising because I think a lot of these young players that have come through their academy have actually been, you know, they've been molded a certain way to play this brand of football. That's kind of the benefits of the way they're set up, Melbourne City. I think Lawrence Wong, as this really technical left-footed number eight, is like a really exciting prospect for not just Melbourne City, but like, you know, Australia potentially moving forward. Like he's clearly got it, this kid, just watching on Friday. I think the other thing too is that pressing side of the game, like they were able to do it for one half against Adelaide and it was still pretty good. They were aggressive. It was good. It worked really well. They threw Adelaide off their game. They just weren't able to sustain it, and that's probably something that you're going to get with young players a little bit too, maybe not having that conditioning to put in that amount of intensity over a 90-minute period. So, yeah, I mean, I think the other thing too, look, our guy Caden has had some pretty strong comments about Callum Talbot on this podcast before. I'm going to join him. That position, whether these guys come back from injury and Nathaniel Atkinson eventually starts at right back again where he should be, hopefully that happens. If not, I'm going to be pretty pissed because, like, I just don't think Callum Talbot should be near this City starting 11. He doesn't offer enough going forward. His end product is poor. And, I mean, Adelaide, like, Tekuli came on and he was like, as soon as he went past Talbot once, he was like, oh, this is awesome. I can just get past this guy every single time. Give me the ball. Sweet. So, like, yeah, that's another red flag for them sort of positionally. But, yeah, not a concerning situation, but I just think thumbing the flag. Like Cody mentioned it, whenever a team like Melbourne City with their ambition, with their stature, loses three games in a row, I think it's worth a conversation. All right, anything for you guys to add on that?
No, not from me. I think that's pretty much covered. You get the result against Perth next week, I think the conversation settles or the conversation increases. So I'm keen to see how that goes.
Just keen to see Matthew Leckie trying to get back to his best as well, as he, you know, just returns to fitness from a long injury spell. Because, you know, I think people, due to his, like, long injury out, you know, outing, you know, haven't been in the squad for quite some time. I think people have forgotten actually how good he is. And it seems to be a trend with Australian football fans who forget Matthew Leckie is an extremely, extremely good footballer. So if Melbourne City do find themselves towards the pointy end of the season, I'm intrigued to see how he performs and I'm excited to see what he brings back to the squad.
Yeah, well, he got through 65 minutes. I'm sure that was pre-planned, that they were only going to play him 65 on Friday. And I thought he looked okay and he's probably going to ramp up a little bit more. So yeah, I second that. All right. That's going to conclude some of our conversations. Other things to mention from the weekend, Henry Hoare has come up a few times in this pod, but he scored again for Brisbane in Wellington. And for one of you, a brief comment on Henry Hoare. Where would you rank him right now in terms of, like, A-League prospects? Because this guy's come back from Korea, and I assure you not, he has, like, immediately made Brisbane a more competitive team, and they actually look like half decent going forward.
It's a hard one because he's also in a side that probably doesn't allow him to be at the best of what he can be. I don't know if I'd put him as like a top 5, top 10, but he's definitely up there in terms of a good A-League player. It's just hard to judge in the environment that he's in, I guess.
I think the best way I can describe it is probably just name teams that he would have a starting 11 spot on. And I mean, obviously, Perth and Newcastle goes without saying. I think that he would definitely start for the Central Coast and Wellington. I think he'd be Smokies for a start at the moment for Melbourne City and Western Sydney Wanderers. And also, I know they have a lot of fucking wingers, but also Melbourne Victory. So, you know, with Nishan Felipe's current form and, you know, so, yeah. I think that he's a really good player. I mean, Brisbane, we'd certainly be happy to have him back because it'll make them look a lot better for the tail end of this season. You know, I said that they have looked worse than that New Zealand Knights team from the inaugural A-League season. I think they, up until this point, have been worse. But Henry Hoare, the addition of that sort of talent, can change their fortunes a little bit and make their season a little less, you know, abysmal.
Meanwhile, Wellington's turgid football actually put me to sleep in the second half of this game. I shit you not, I actually struggled to stay awake. And it was a Thursday afternoon.
Number one fan going to sleep. Whoa.
Listen, at 3 o'clock, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 2:30 kickoff.
I'll be honest.
Yeah, so.
3 o'clock on
2:30. Australia. Yeah, 2:30.
I'll be honest. Considering I was at work, I almost didn't even realize this game happened.
I know Antonis didn't realize this game was on because someone told him that. Obviously, Nathan Amanitidis made his first start for Brisbane, which was good to see. And someone kind of told him Nathan Amanitidis started, and he was like, wait, what game? So, no, it actually, There's actually, and I don't want to start a big conversation with this, so let's not go on a tangent, but there's obviously it's Waitangi Day. I'm pretty sure I've butchered that in New Zealand, but the public holiday. They got 9,000 there for the game, so that's good. But I'm wondering if they might think about putting a New Zealand derby on that day against Auckland, because you're probably going to get upwards of 25 or more. I don't know. Let's guess we'd see if they'd consider that. Anyway, but yeah. Wellington, Chiefy, we're going to have a discussion, I think. Don't know what's going on. I'm going to have the heart-to-heart about the lack of...
Christians have an identity crisis.
Yeah, we're just it's struggle street. Hey,
Christian's going the right way to be hung up in the dressing room next season, like his picture being printed out and put on the wall.
Possibly. Meanwhile, over in Perth, another Ollie Sale error. Yet another one. Feels like it's every second or third week at the moment with this guy. Now, pretty much ruined another decent Perth performance, because they were 1-0 up and were looking pretty solid. Mariners weren't really causing them any issues, and then Hay Neems just has a pod shot from the edge of the box, and yeah, Ollie Sale just lets it slip through his fingers, and that was a draw, and that was it. So pretty frustrating. Should Perth be charged with some sort of negligence over the goalkeeper position at this point? Should Cameron Cook just be starting from now on and that's it?
Cameron Cook season. Let's get it going.
Yeah.
Let's go. The bottom three teams have to play their second game for the rest of the season, because obviously it's had good fortunes for the Jets. Probably will have better fortunes for Perth Glory. And I mean, can it get really any worse for Brisbane? So I think that should be a new rule, wild card rule in the A-League. The bottom three teams have to play their second game.
For
the rest of the season.
Thrillers like watching Noah James yesterday. Like, yeah, let me have some of that. A little bit. And anyway.
How much does he cost?
Yeah, it's like, actually, Ryan Scott, out of favor of the Jets, we'll take him. I don't know. That's an interesting one with Newcastle, though. If Noah James takes this spot, like, I'm not sure if Ryan Scott's going to be kind of, like, thrilled to just be sitting on the bench playing backup. I know he was the first guy to kind of congratulate him for the performance yesterday, but, yeah, interesting sort of situation to monitor. Jack Duncan as well is another goalkeeper who's just kind of on the bench now and has played really well when he did start earlier on the season. Anyway, MacArthur and Western drawing 2-2 today. Crazy game. Both teams deciding not to defend for the last 10, 15 minutes, and a little bit kind of Sydney Derby-esque in that manner. And I have no idea how neither team actually got a winner in this game. That last 15 minutes was insane, with just chance after chance. Jack wants to instill some Noah Bottage propaganda. That's what he wants to do.
Yeah. You knew exactly where I was going to go.
Oh, yeah. I read your tweets. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I read them.
Popper, get your address book out. Find the kid's number. Give him a call tomorrow, because fucking hell. Like, he's just... I honestly think, like, as far as in the country goes, he's the best finisher in the country right now. I think he's the best finisher in the entire league. Like, if you go pound for pound, chance for chance...
Archie Goodwin also exists. I'm just letting you know. That's all.
Yeah, but again, you know, I think that Bodic is, like, maturing a lot with his body, the use of his body as well to, like, push his team forward. Archie Goodwin has always had an innate sense of where to be in the box in order to finish off chances, which also duly, like, Noah Bodic possesses. But I think it's more about how he enhances the team going forward. And a lot of those sort of more dynamic fields of play that maybe Archie Goodwin doesn't quite have in his locker yet, because he doesn't have as much experience as Noah Bodic. But yeah, freaking get the phone book out. Like, seriously, cap this kid. Like, he's brilliant. And like, Western United, better hope they make finals this year, which I think they will. I think they're good enough to make the finals.
Did you see Wallaty's goal?
Oh, yeah. No, it's absolutely... You know, smashing into a corner. But yeah, I'm just going to talk about Noah Bodic, because, you know, he should be in the green and gold the next...
I'm pretty sure you've got posters of Noah Bodic in your room at this point. It's relentless propaganda. But shout out.
I love a dynamic forward. He can do it all. I love a dynamic forward. He can just do everything. All right. And he does everything. He's a Ryobi fucking, you know, tool belt. Like, he's just got everything, you know?
What? Anyway, shout out. Shout out Tristan McManus for his post-match interview with Noah Bottage, where his last question, he just goes to him, "Socceroos?" and then puts puts the microphone in his face, just puts the poor kid on his spot. I can't do the Irish accent, otherwise I would. But yeah, kind of put the poor lad on the spot there. Anyway, but no, he's been absolutely superb. And Marin Yakulis, finally broke his kind of goal drought there. He's certainly not in Socceroos conversations anymore, even though he can't actually play for the Socceroos. But yeah, that sort of conversation, yeah, kind of stopped real quick. Anyway, all right, that's gonna do it. Successful podcast. Well done, boys. You can talk. You feel free.
Oh, I was giving myself a thumbs up.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if you were going to say something.
Sorry, my hands were full with so much padding on the back going on back here in Newcastle. This is too much. I can't handle it. I couldn't press the unmute button.
All right. So anything else to add from either of you?
Quickly say that FPF football, Front Page Football TV has not been cancelled. It's just on hiatus for the next couple of weeks until I get stuff in my personal life sorted out. So, haha, we'll be back soon, very soon.
We are volunteers, yeah. And
yeah, exactly.
Wow, that got real. And also, everything is all good. For anyone wondering, our social media is kind of very close to near full functioning again. We had a couple of issues, but we're all good. And we should have a lot of content coming up on the website over the next week. So stay tuned for that too. So frontpagefootball.net, the website, social media at frontpgfootball, Twitter on Instagram, frontpagefootball on Facebook, LinkedIn threads, Blue Sky. Yeah, basically wherever, TikTok. And you can catch all of our different coverage on Australian football. NPL's back. So, yeah, a lot of coverage is going to be coming on the local game from our platforms as well. So stay tuned with it. All right. Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Cody, for joining me on this Sunday night. And, yeah, that has been another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. I've been your host, Christian Marchetti. And until next week, it's bye for now.